Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third.
Patriots Playbook.
Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the
2006
NFL season.
Go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Can you possibly comprehend what we're talking about here? Yes, indeed. Patriots Playbook has officially arrived in the 21st century. Your calls, your emails have been heard.
Woo-wee!
Yes, indeed. No more crickets chirping around here, baby. The crickets have, well, let's just say they've spoken. Patriots Playbook will now be podcast, so you can listen to this program whenever you like.
At least for the playoffs.
At least for the playoffs. Now, we don't know about yet next year, do we? Make sure you download this show, and you download it a lot, because if you download it a lot, then that will show demand, and it will show, well, you know, anyway. We're happy that we can bring it to you here for the playoffs. Yes. Yes, indeed. So now not only is PFW in progress, podcastable, downloadable, to play it whenever you have the time to play it. The website is currently being adjusted and set up as we speak to where you will be able to download Patriots Playbook for your podcasting pleasure. So we're very, very happy to bring you that service here on Patriots.com and Patriots.com Radio. We're arriving into the 21st century. So thank you very much for your cards, your letters, your emails. We do appreciate it. And hey, you're the one that's going to benefit because you don't necessarily now. I mean, it's always great. Okay. Let me first of all get this straight. It's always wonderful for you to think enough of me and of this program and of this organization to make this appointment listening at 2 p.m. Eastern time during the week. It's wonderful that you do that. And I hope that whenever it's convenient for you, that you'll still be able to do that, because that way we can interact on the show. You know, we got the whole email and telephone call thing going on here that we would hate to get rid of. We still want to be able to do that, and we love going back and forth here with you, because after all, your comments help drive the content of this program. Don't ever forget that. That's why we rely on you guys, because we want to know what you're thinking so we know what direction that we can take the show in. However, we also understand that you're very busy. In this day and age, it's a busier world, such as it is, and with the technology that we now have, why not make things more convenient if you can make them more convenient? And that's what we're able to do with podcasting, and now you'll be able to download it and listen to it whenever it is convenient for you, and then hopefully you'll still be able to contribute to the program whenever you can. So, wonderful news. Glad to bring that about. Thanks to Gary and, of course, to Fred Kirsch. To everyone who's going to be a part of making this program podcastable, downloadable for you. Here we go. Now the real season starts. I think we all realize that the win over the Jets was a great start to the postseason. It was exactly what the doctor was looking for, exactly what the doctor ordered. I know that fans feel pretty good about the Patriots' chances right now after the 37-16 win here on Sunday. Now I'm going to burst your bubble. Season ends on Sunday. That's how I feel right now. I don't necessarily... I'm going to be curious to see, though, if you or our guests on the show over the course of the next couple of days the media that I read or that I listen to over the next few days as well can help me change my mind. But as of right this moment, I've got 2:13 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, January the 9th, right now, and as of this moment, I think that San Diego wins the football game on Sunday. Sorry to burst your bubble, but that's what I think right now. Now, I don't know what I'm going to think at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday, about the time that we wrap it up this week. I'm not sure what I'm going to think 24 hours from now. It could be different. I want to see how much I move. Let me explain why I think like I do at this stage of the game. Now, you certainly are welcome to tell me I'm off my rocker and tell me why you think I'm wrong. That's what you're good at. I've always gotten a great dose of reality from many of you. And I've also gotten many of you who also agree from time to time. And if you're kind of thinking, ooh, I think that the gravy train is over this week, and you want to agree with me, well, then that's fine. Tell me why. But here's my early premonition on this game, and what I'm looking for here. I mean, normally on Thursdays we ask for your score predictions, right? And I know some of you give them to me on Tuesdays and Wednesdays during the week. I think it's a little unfair to really go out on a limb here and say X is going to beat Y, period. And maybe here's why. Well, because you don't know what will transpire over the course of the week. Different things can happen. Injuries can happen. Different stories can happen. I mean, there are different things that can swing momentum. But at least at this stage of the game, I'm thinking this way simply because, number one, I think San Diego was the superior team overall in the NFL this year. I don't think anybody will really argue that fact. Fact is, they were 14-2, and I realize that there are many of you that don't believe San Diego played all that great of a schedule themselves this year. Fact is, they beat four teams with winning records. The Patriots beat two. All right, so it's a little bit better. They did it, however, with the rookie quarterback. They did it with the offensive and MVP of the entire year, of course, in the NFL, and LaDainian Tomlinson. They did it with a guy who easily could have been the defensive player of the year in the league had he not been suspended for four games for cheating and taking steroids, and that's Sean Merriman. Fact is, Merriman's football talent is significant. And San Diego's defense measures up against the weakness of the Patriots' offense, almost too good to be true. And the fact is that when you rattle Tom Brady, you can beat the Patriots. And nobody has done more rattling than the San Diego defense. 61 sacks to lead the league this year. Now, you probably are already aware of this, but I'm saying right now, based on what I know, and this is what I know, that one factor alone causes me to think, you know what, that's 5-point spread that has now been established as a general number that the Chargers are favored by on Sunday, I think is about right. Now, let's see what happens over the next, hour and 45 minutes of this show. Let's see what happens between now and tomorrow. Let's see what happens between now and the end of the show on Thursday.
Fred just called. He wants to cancel your podcast.
That's what I thought. Red light's blinking over there on the phone. He's like, so much for podcasting now. Who wants to listen to this garbage? I could be completely and totally off my rocker, but that is the one thing that keeps coming back to me. I think that the Patriots will find a way, at least initially now, just initially, I think the Patriots will find a way to put some confusion in Phillip Rivers' mind. I think that they've always done that with younger quarterbacks. I think they'll probably provide some looks that Rivers has not seen for all of the brilliance that that Marty Schottenheimer can be and Cam Cameron can be on offense for the Chargers. I think the Patriots will find a way to make things tough for him. The X factor in all of this, of course, is LaDainian Tomlinson, who has three career games, and he's averaged better than 140 yards in those three career games against the Patriots' defense. I think the Patriots may even be able to slow LaDainian Tomlinson down. And by the way, might I add, based on what I've learned of LT over the course of the last 6 weeks of the season, and again, I say LT with some reservation because to me, I'm one of those old school guys. There's really only one LT, of course, Lawrence Taylor. But I think this guy deserves to be called LT if he wants to be called LT because he is a reluctant superstar. And I think humbly that puts him right up at the top of my list. That his traits are admirable. He works hard. He deflects praise. He's not conceited. He's not, show me the respect. He's not one of those guys that pounds his chest. And I like my superstars like that. I don't know about you, but it's hard to root against a guy like LaDainian Tomlinson, unless, of course, he's playing against you. I don't think that gives the Chargers any sort of an edge over the Patriots on Sunday. But when you look at, again, the cold, hard facts here, fact is that he's averaged over 140 yards in three career games. The last time these two teams played 2 years ago, Patriots were absolutely slapped upside of the head and left for dead on the side of the road and losing 41-17. How many times, by the way, have you ever seen a Bill Belichick team be outscored 24-0 in a particular half, and yet that's what happened in that game here 2 years ago? 17-17 game at half, and all of a sudden, whack, you lose 41-17. I don't think that that's going to happen on Sunday. I think the Patriots will be in the game on Sunday. I think the game will boil down to, as it always does in playoff games and in games of any subsequence and any consequence for that matter, it boils down to field position and turnovers. The Patriots turned the ball over the first time in, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? With Corey Dillon's fumble here on Sunday, and yet they were able to make up for that by forcing two of their own. And, of course, they both directly led to points. Vince Wilfork's fumble on what we didn't even think was a fumble when we first saw it on the pass, and the return set up a field goal. And then, of course, Asante Samuel's pick return for a touchdown. By the way, I am more convinced now than ever that Asante Samuel will not be a Patriot once this season is over. I am more convinced now than ever we will be seeing the last of Asante Samuel in a Patriot uniform. His price on the open market just went up exponentially. And the Patriots aren't going to match that. And I think you and I and everybody need to realize that right now. He's just not going to be back. I think we're going to have to pat him on the back, wish him well, good luck with your money, and hope you can find a spot that, you know, doesn't suck. Because that's what it's going to be left up to. But he's not going to get the money he can command on the open market from the Patriots. You know it. I know it. We all know it. So get used to that right now. And I'm sure that the other guys, the PFW guys, have talked about this, and we've even mentioned this here on this show throughout the course of the season. But I am more convinced now than ever that we're seeing the last of Asante in a Patriots uniform. And it's because he's putting up the kind of numbers he is, and because it overinflates his value on the marketplace. Is he a lockdown, shutdown corner? No. Is he a good cornerback? Yeah, he's okay. Is he one of the top 10, 15, 20 guys in the league? Probably. Is he one of the top 4 or 5 in the league? No. And that's what he's going to command. He's going to command that kind of a salary. Patriots could, well, I don't know, you know, if they thought about franchising him, they'd have to pay him the average of the top 5 players in the league. And I don't think that that's something that they're willing to do. And frankly, I'm not so sure that they should. The Patriots aren't quite as roomy in the salary cap space that you think that they have, as you may believe. So, you know, there are some other things, and Mike Reese goes into it a bit on his blog, and I believe on his notebook in the Boston Globe. And I'd kind of heard some rumblings to this effect from some other sources. And apparently his source that's telling him what he's telling him is a pretty good one. I'm going to paraphrase for you because I got to get it called up here if you haven't seen it. But the fact remains is that Patriots aren't quite as roomy in terms of the salary cap as you think that they might be. It's sort of along the lines of how the Yankees are and how baseball has their thing set up. And well, let me see if I can get this called up here because I don't want to go into any more details without actually quoting from Mike's piece because Mike has pretty much got it set here. And I was reading through this earlier today, and so I've gone to a couple of different sources that I have for information on this very subject. And can't get anybody to dispute it. So by that, I mean I'm led to believe that at least there is some truth to this. And I'm kind of getting off the whole, you know, Charger thing, but quite honestly, we've got the whole next couple of days to talk about this a little bit. Let me see what we got here. This is a... Here we go. All right. Now we got it coming up. This was on Boston.com, and we're looking in particular at, this is just riveting stuff, I realize. This is totally riveting here. We have some crickets.
Boring!
Yeah, I know. I want to be accurate on this, however. He doesn't have it in his blog. This came in his message board, I believe, from an email that was answered by somebody. So we'll get it called up, and we'll get on to the subject here in a couple of moments anyway. It's very difficult to kind of do this on the fly when you're trying to refer directly to a particular source so you can talk about it a little bit. But fact is that there isn't quite as much room available as you think that there might be for the Patriots, and because of that, they're probably not going to overextend anymore, which means not pay exorbitant salaries to guys that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily pay exorbitant salaries to. That's just the way it's going to be. And so because of that, that's why we've seen the last of Asante Samuel, at least once the season is over. Now, of course, there is some conjecture as to whether or not this season is actually going to be over. And I realize that there are many of you that think that, well, it's not going to be over and that this is the start of something better. I will give you this. I do believe that the Super Bowl winner comes out of this game on Sunday. Whether it's San Diego or New England, I think that the winner of the Super Bowl comes out of this game. And I say that with all due respect to the Colts and the Ravens. And there's just nobody in the NFC is going to win. I mean, of course, then again, hey, I didn't think that Ohio State was going to lose that game last night either. And look what happened. They got whacked by Florida. So is it possible? Well, sure, it's possible. Anything is possible. It's why you play the game. But let's just say on the surface, I believe strongly that the winner of this game wins overall because they will have proven, whoever survives this battle, they have proven that they will have beaten, I think, the toughest opponent on the way to the playoffs. I, for one, am going to be rooting hard for the Patriots to win, and I'm going to be rooting hard for the Colts to win because I desperately want to see a Patriots-Colts matchup in the Dome next Sunday, the following Sunday. And I think a lot of us would love to see that. I think the Colts have a chance to win that game. I don't think anybody should sleep on them based on what we saw them do against Kansas City this last weekend. I think it gives the Colts certainly a chance. I think Peyton Manning will be more than motivated to go up against arguably the best defense in the NFL this year that Baltimore has. There's nothing that Baltimore does offensively that really should scare Indianapolis defensively, to be honest, because if they can shut down, you know, Larry Johnson and the Chiefs, although, you know, Trent Green really doesn't put a lot of fear into people's hearts, and I could see where you could go with, you know, Steve McNair and think he would be a little bit more of a formidable foe, certainly from a quarterbacking perspective. But I just don't think that there's anything that's going to intimidate the Colts defense at all. They are feeling as good as they have felt all year long right now. And as we all know, in the playoffs, it is certainly all about momentum. I think the Colts have a little bit right now. I think they've righted the ship. They did what they needed to do. We, as the consuming NFL public, needed to be convinced of this. And I was convinced after watching that game. I think the Colts have a shot. I think the Colts can win. I'm not saying they will yet. I'm still not decided on that one, and I'm going to wait until the last minute to pick that one. And we'll talk more about that probably on Thursday with Russell Baxter. Right now, I do think the Patriots come up a little bit short against San Diego.
Yourself, San Diego.
Yeah, well, we may all be saying that by the time the game is over on Sunday. Fact is, though, is that I think it will be a knockdown, drag-out, physical affair. I think there will be some back and forth. As long as the Patriots don't shoot themselves in the foot with the turnovers and the field position and the penalties, which are certainly magnified, you know, twice and thrice in a playoff game, then the Patriots will be right there and have a chance to win. Conversely, if they're able to get into the head of Phillip Rivers and they're able to show him some looks and he throws a couple of picks, which will limit the overall effectiveness of a guy like Tomlinson, then I think the Patriots will have a chance to win. I'm not giving them no chance. I'd say right now, I'd say that they're on the outside looking in. Coming up on the program here in just a little bit, certainly in our 3 o'clock hour, as normally on Tuesdays, Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News will join us to give his perspective on the Jets win on Sunday. So we'll recap a little bit over the win over the hated J-E-T-S, Jets. And I believe, and I don't know if we're going to have this or not, and we'll get some more on this in just a little bit, but there was a conference call that was held by the National Football League with the announcers, the CBS television announcers for the game this coming Sunday, which I believe Jim Nance and Phil Sims. Is that right, Gary? Dan Dierdorf.
And Sims.
I guess they're doing the color for the two AFC games. Is that right? Are they the analysts for the two AFC games? All right. So what we'll do is we're going to be able to listen in to this conference call coming up in a little bit so they can give you their perspective here on this Tuesday early in the game week on the two matchups in the AFC playoffs, the two divisional matchups, of course, between the Pats, the Chargers, and, of course, the Ravens and the Colts. I don't know who has which, though. Do we have Nance and... Nance and Sims? I don't know. I don't know how they do the TV pairing for that yet. At any rate, It'll be Sims and Dan Dierdorf on the conference call, and we will play that for you coming up here and bring it to you here in just a little bit inside the playbook. So that'll give you some perspective as well and give you some good stuff to chew on. In the meantime, I want to share with you a couple of other things. In addition to, you know, you coming up to me and telling me I'm ludicrous and telling me I'm silly and telling me I'm way off base in terms of my early prediction of the Chargers beating the Patriots. And by the way, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address for those that might be tuning in for the first time. I realize it's hard to understand. It's hard to believe if you're coming in for the first time. Where you been all year long? This is the 18th week we've been here, but we're glad you're here nevertheless. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get your messages and your thoughts, your comments, your criticisms to us. You can also pick up the phone and call us at 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. I got this from coldhardfootballfacts.com. I know there are probably many of you that also look at that site from time to time. It's actually a very good site for analysis and for conjecture, for opinion, and also for numbers. I think, surprisingly, they do a pretty good job with numbers. It's not Stats, Inc. It's not the Elias Sports Bureau, but they're pretty good in terms of, you know, taking some of the things that are most obvious and breaking them down for you and trying to make some sense and some heads tails out of it. I think part of the reason that many are just not sold on San Diego as a winner or sold on San Diego as an overwhelming favorite right now, not only against the Patriots but to win the Super Bowl, even though they're the odds-on favorite, it has to do with Marty Schottenheimer. Marty Schottenheimer has been a very good regular season coach throughout his career. You'd have to say that he certainly merits consideration for the Hall of Fame when he is done because of his overall win percentage. I mean, he has 200 regular season wins. Problem is the playoffs. Playoffs, he has been, well, shall we say, less than stellar. He's 5-12 in the playoffs. He's lost his last five games as a head coach in the playoffs. Now, that may be the obvious fact that you already know. Well, Cold Hard Football Facts did a pretty good breakdown on some other very good coaches throughout the history of the NFL that have had poor records in the playoffs. And I thought maybe you would find it interesting here, and maybe you would understand that Marty Schottenheimer is in pretty good company here, and that maybe if the Patriots do win this game, and especially if you're listening from a San Diego perspective here, maybe you're a Chargers fan, maybe you're tuning in from their website, whatever. Welcome, by the way. Glad to have you here, and I would love to have your input and your feedback on the program here. Your questions, your comments, your criticisms, what have you. It's wide open here for all comers. But I think if you're looking at it from a San Diego perspective, here's a guy that, you know, if you decide to, you know, shoot him in the face or, you know, haul his carcass out of town if the Patriots win this game, that you might be throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You might not want to quite do that yet. First of all, comparing him to Bill Belichick is like comparing, you know, ham and eggs to caviar. It's just not going to get done. Fact is that Bill Belichick is going to go down as one of the greatest coaches of all time in the NFL, and he should. For the job that he's done with New England, three Super Bowls in a five-year period, 12-2 postseason mark is only surpassed by the 9-1 that Vince Lombardi has. Okay, that's all been said before. Marty Schottenheimer, though, with a couple hundred regular season wins and a 5-12 postseason record. Let me give you a couple of other coaches that you'd have to say would be, oh, I don't know, Hall of Fame caliber, if not already in the Hall of Fame. How about a guy like Paul Brown? Okay? Paul Brown, right? The architect of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, fact is that he's one of the greatest coaches perhaps ever in the history of the NFL. I don't think that that's a complete and total stretch. He's been a part of, I guess, really one of the early dynasties in the NFL when he had, you know, Otto Graham as his quarterback. You know, the Browns were, you know, around back in the 1940s as the old All-America Football Conference. They competed against the NFL like the old AFL did for a number of years. This was all World War II stuff. But they appeared in 10 straight championship games. 10 straight championship games every year from 1946 to 1955. Paul Brown was the architect of all of that. He was a part of all of that. His overall career record, 166 of 100 in the regular season. Did you know he was only 4-8 in the postseason? All right. Let me give you another one. How about George Allen? Yep, George Allen. Tom Landry's greatest nemesis as head coach. George Allen and the Redskins and Tom Landry and the Dallas Cowboys back in the 1970s and even into the 80s, I think was pro football's greatest rivalry, and we have struggled to come up with a likewise a rivalry since that time. I think we've got some decent matchups out there, but we don't have hatred on the field like we had on the field when Landry's Cowboys met Allen's Redskins. They hated each other. They despised each other. And George Allen, I mean, he's certainly amongst the who's who of NFL coaching legends. He won 71% of his games in 12 NFL seasons with the Redskins and the LA Rams. And by the way, among coaches with 100 wins or more in their careers, only John Madden and Vince Lombardi have a greater winning percentage than George Allen. Okay? And yet George Allen's record of the postseason was, the envelope please, 2-7. Okay. All I'm saying here is that Marty Schottenheimer, who has 200 regular season wins, more than either one of those guys, should be given the benefit of the doubt, should be given a chance to, you know, continue to do what he does best. Maybe at some point in time he finds a way to get over the hump and can become at least an adequate postseason coach. I don't know if that will happen this year. But I can also argue, and I think I can make this argument, that if these Chargers do beat the Patriots, they are well on their way to providing that sort of relief to Marty Schottenheimer. And I also believe that, you know, there are guys in that clubhouse, in that locker room in San Diego, who think enough of Marty. First of all, he would not have come back to coach the Chargers had not A.J. Smith, and who's obviously the general manager of the Chargers, who has New England roots. He's a Rhode Islander. They think enough of Marty to have brought him in as coach to begin with and bring him out of retirement. Remember, he was doing the ESPN thing for a couple of years after he left Kansas City. They think he can be their guy. And they're trying now to find that way to get over the hump. And this year, I mean, 14-2 in the regular season, how can you argue with that? They did their job better than anybody else. All due respect to balance of schedule and weakness and strength and this and that, they won the games on their schedule more than anybody else. You can only play the games that are on your schedule that the league tells you to play. So I really, relative schedule strength, take it somewhere else. They did what other teams couldn't do. That's the bottom line. And Marty Schottenheimer was certainly a part of that. I realize that there's always going to be criticism on his coaching talents as the field of competition gets a little tougher, that there are curious calls that are made from the sidelines of teams that he has coached in the past, and you wonder, well, where did he get that? And it usually blows up in their face. I understand all of that. And you know what? If the Patriots win this game, then those questions will still remain. I don't think that makes him any less of a coach. I just think what it does is it's something that he's going to have to do as a part of a self-examination. He needs to perhaps let his assistants do more of the coaching. And maybe that's something that happened this year, San Diego. That's something I'd love to get into a little bit, and I think we'll be able to do that. Hank Bauer from the Chargers Radio Network is going to join us on Thursday, I believe, to talk a little bit more about the Chargers in particular, and I think that's something we'll definitely get into where Marty Schottenheimer is concerned. But I think that there are some of you that undoubtedly believe that the Patriots will win the game because Marty Schottenheimer can't. Well, okay, I guess that's a fair, I think that's a fair criticism for now, but when you consider the bigger picture, I mean, here's a guy that won with Bernie Kosar at quarterback, for example. Dave Craig. Steve Bono, Elvis Gerbach. I mean, he's won with a lot of lousy quarterbacks, and I don't think you truly become, or let's just say average quarterbacks at best, I don't think you'll find a single quarterback I don't think you'll find a single head coach in NFL history who's considered an elite coach. You won't find a single coach. Let me repeat this again. You won't find a coach in NFL history who's considered an elite, one of the best, without having that coach having a star quarterback. You won't find one because they don't exist. Vince Lombardi, he had Bart Starr. Tom Landry, he had Roger Staubach. Bill Walsh, well, it's pretty obvious he had Montana, and he certainly had, thank you, Steve Young. I'm looking at him right now, and I can't come up with his name. Dense. Just as an example, right? Obviously, Bill Belichick has Tom Brady. Who is Martin Schottenheimer had? I just named him. But he does have Phillip Rivers now. And I'm not going to put Phillip Rivers yet on a par with any of those guys. But if Rivers can become, a large percentage of what Tom Brady has, and if he can lead this Charger team, which is built up around him, if he can lead this Charger team to a championship, I think you'd have to say that Marty Schottenheimer belongs exactly where he belongs, and that's probably amongst the game's best coaches. Again, just an opinion. But Schottenheimer has not really had that kind of a quarterback. Maybe he does now, and maybe that's the reason why he hasn't had playoff success. Good coaches have playoff success because they have outstanding quarterbacks leading the way. Just my thoughts. I'd like to know how you think about that and what you think about that particular assessment. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's how you reach us. Let me get a couple of emails in here. I do want to go back a bit over the Jets game simply because, well, it's traditionally what we do on Tuesdays after a Sunday game. And we'll try not to spend too much time on the Jets only because, hey, I just like the team down the hallway here. They feel like they're a little behind the eight ball and getting prepared for San Diego, and that's what they're doing today. And we're also getting prepared for San Diego, so we do want to focus on the Chargers, but we're going to have all tomorrow and Thursday and then certainly the replays on Friday and everything else that'll be going on here on web radio. The team, of course, is going to take off here on Friday just because of the length of the trip rather than on Saturday. So it will be a bit of a shorter work week for them. And certainly you can understand that because of a six-hour trip out to the West Coast. But we do want to spend at least a couple of moments looking back at some of the highlights. And also we're going to nitpick, we'll definitely nitpick on the win over the Jets on Sunday. And I'll give you a couple of potential Achilles heels for the Patriots. And you probably come up with them yourself. But there are a couple of areas of concern on this football team that I think well, probably. Maybe not, but I think at this stage of the game here on Tuesday, I think that will could lead to the Patriots' downfall. And we've talked about these particular areas over the course of the last few weeks. If you've listened at all to the program prior to today, then you'll understand where I'm coming from when we get to this, but that's coming up in a bit. In the meantime, webradio at patriots.com. That's how you reach us here on the show. Tom in Nottingham, England sends the note, and he goes, John, just heard you say that we're getting your show on podcast, which is great for us people over here in England. I'm the guy that first suggested your show for podcast as I emailed in last week for the first time, so I must admit I'm really happy. I think you're way better than the PFW guys. How about that? I get some plaudits, get some kudos. Well, you know what? With all due respect, Tom, the PFW guys, yeah, serious ball washing. I know. PFW guys do a fantastic job. I respect each and every one of those guys for the job that they do because, when you work for the team and you're employed by the team and to be able to have some journalistic, call it as you see it, integrity about you to keep that intact, while realizing that it's the team itself that's paying your paycheck, that's a very tough thing to do. And I think Fred and Andy and Paul and Tom do that as well as anybody in the business. And, you may not agree with anything that they say here on the shows. I'm sure many of you don't agree with anything they say. You may think some of the guys are off base. But I will tell you this, when it comes down to, football knowledge, those guys know a lot. So thank you for your comments anyway. He said, Tom says, great win on Sunday. Felt the Pats were always in control. Money is on San Diego to win next week, although LT is going to win or lose that game. If we can stop him, we'll win. If not, I say San Diego wins a tight one, 28-24. Cheers, and I hope the podcast becomes more permanent. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that. It's a start. It's a start is what it is. And I appreciate your listening today, Tom. Thank you very, very much. Alex says, John, do you foresee another Marty Schottenheimer implosion in the playoffs, just like the ones in Cleveland and Kansas City? Well, kind of like I was talking about, Alex, I think that Schottenheimer's implosion will probably come due to the fact that he's either able to get Phillip Rivers to play or B, Phillip Rivers falls miserably on his ass. One or the other. the quarterback play is going to dictate whether or not Schottenheimer is considered a playoff success or not, based on my previous statements. So if Phillip Rivers comes in and can manage to manage, that's all he's going to do. Again, he's got the team built up around him. He's got good wideouts, he's got an all-pro tight end, and he's got the most valuable player in the entire NFL to hand the ball off to and to throw the ball to out of the backfield. Now, I would like to say that you or I could get in there and hand the ball off to LT and we'd have some success. I realize that that's, you know, that's stupid. But fact is that's really the case and really the situation for Phillip Rivers. Don't mess it up, big fella. It's the Patriots' job to make him mess it up. It's the Patriots' job this week, more so than focusing, I think, on LaDainian Tomlinson. It's the Patriots' job, in order to win on Sunday, to screw up Phillip Rivers. That's where I think the ultimate outcome of this football game will lie on Sunday. Tomlinson's going to get his. You want to keep him from the, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 yarders for touchdowns. But if he gets 25 to 30 carries and he gets 100 to 120 yards, well, then he gets it. Big deal. As long as you keep him out of the end zone, that's what you want to do. To me, you've got to create some confusion for Phillip Rivers. You've got to stop the QB. You've got to make Marty Marty, and you've got to make him, you've got to make the Chargers one-dimensional. And I think the Patriots realize LT is a tremendous talent, and I don't know that you're going to stop him. You want to contain him, sure. You probably want to keep him between the tackles. You don't want him to get around the edges. You probably see some similar containment for the Patriots that you saw them instigate when they faced Vince Young in Tennessee a couple of weeks ago. You want to make sure that you pinch the edges. You want to rush the ends upfield and make sure that Tomlinson does not get outside the tackles. I would imagine that would have to be a part of the game plan. You want to contain him as best as possible, and if he's going to get tough yards between the tackles, then you say, hey, bully for you. But you want to keep him from busting the big one. This is, however, part of the reason why I think the Patriots right now, I think the Patriots are going to lose. Because I've said this from day one. They don't tackle well. And I'll expand upon this in a little bit later, but when we get to some of the other nitpicks. But I don't think that that's going to change. And so, you know, maybe they do pinch the ends in. Maybe they do keep LT between the tackles. But LT is going to still pop one. He'll still pop one on Sunday because the Patriots will miss some tackles. Whether it's Bruschi or Vrabel or Samuel or James Sanders or somebody else that's going to have a shot at him, somebody's going to miss a tackle. They may miss a tackle on a particular play, and he'll pop one. That's the key. You can't miss tackles. You had better wrap them up. You'd better get your big paws on them and wrap them up. Because once you get your hands on him, if he squirts free, you're not going to get your hands on him again. But, Alex, again, to answer your question, we'll know more about Marty Schottenheimer provided on the play that Phillip Rivers gives him at quarterback. Alejandro from Bogota, Colombia. John, great, great news. With the podcast, I'll be able to keep up with the Patriots and still have a job. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Alejandro, and I'm glad that you'll still have a job. I think San Diego is the better team, and nobody matches up well against that offense, and that defense can put the pressure on any QB. Anyway, after reading the San Diego newspaper, you get that feeling of the fox is in the hen house, and they don't sound all that confident. Hence my questions. Number one, that 5-point spread, isn't it a little too high? I'll take these individually, Alejandro. No, I think that's about right, because I think home field advantage is usually worth at least 3. What do you think, Gary? Isn't home field advantage to an NFL team worth about 3 points anyway? Okay. I actually thought it was about 6, but I think I'm wrong about that. I think home field advantage to a team in the NFL is worth about 3 points. In some other sports, home field, home court, home ice, what have you, I think can be worth anywhere from 5 to 6 points or goals or whatever a game. But in the NFL, it's certainly worth 3. So I think what you're doing is you're giving the benefit of the doubt to the Chargers simply because they played a slightly tougher schedule. They've been a slightly better home team. Ha! They're unbeaten at home, whereas the Patriots struggle at home, although Patriots did play well on the road. Yes, yes, I know. So I think that's just giving respect to the Chargers. based on what they did during the regular season. And I think that's also, you're probably getting an extra point added in there for the fact that they did have a bye. Now, I think sometimes in the playoffs, the bye can be overrated, and certainly Pittsburgh showed that last year. But that doesn't mean that that's going to be the case year in and year out. What it does mean is that for a team that is seeded anywhere from 3 through 6, it gives them the ability to think, well, hey, if Pittsburgh did it, we can do it. So it certainly should help from a self-confidence point of view, without a doubt. Fact is that you'd rather have to win 2 games than have to win 3 to make the Super Bowl, because the odds are better. And so I think that's all that 5 points is, and I think that's actually about right. I think it's about right. Question number 2, do you think the Patriots defense will be able to confuse Rivers? Well, that's the entire key to the game, Alejandro. That's the entire key to the game. Forget LT. You want to contain him, like I said, but to me, the way the Patriots win this game is by confusing Phillip Rivers and forcing him into mistakes. Conversely, it's up to Marty Schottenheimer and Cam Cameron, their offensive coordinator, to develop a game plan that will allow Rivers to operate within the confines of the talent that he has surrounding him. How best do they do that? Probably ball control, LT left, LT right, tight end over the middle. I don't think you'll see them take a lot of stabs down deep because, you know, Asante Samuel is that kind of a threat. If you miss, Samuel can make you pay. That's the one thing that Samuel can do very well. Question number 3, can the Patriots' O-line hold in order to exploit the Chargers' secondary? Well, they're going to have to. My ultimate answer to that would be no right now. Once again, 61 sacks by the Chargers' defense speaks for itself. Nobody in the NFL had more. And I realize the Patriots only gave up 29 sacks to Brady all year long, which is certainly a respectable number. I think it was in the upper third of the league, like 10th or so. So it's a respectable number. But we all know that when Brady does feel pressure, the overwhelming majority of those number of sacks came when the Patriots lost or struggled. And the Jets proved that back in November. Now, the Patriots were able to counterbalance that by utilizing ball control and getting the jump on the Jets this last week. Now, if they can do that against the Chargers and put the Chargers coming from behind, then I think that will play into the Patriots' hands. Very important for the Patriots to get a jump, I think, on the Chargers and knock some of the wind out of their sails and take some of that crowd out of the game in San Diego. If the Patriots can get the football first, they will. There won't be any deferring here. They'll definitely take the football, and they'll try to march it down the field. I fully expect the Patriots, at least initially, to ball control, whether or not it's with the run game or the controlled passing game. I think you might, it worked last week. I don't think there's any question that you're going to try to do some no-huddle ball control just so the Chargers can't make their substitutions off the field, you know, to keep them kind of wondering and guessing and keep them on their heels. You like that kind of a game plan best, and the Patriots are very good at that. And there are very few quarterbacks in the league that are adept at slicing and dicing like Tom Brady is against that kind of a defense, an attack mode defense. And you saw what it did against the Jets' attack mode defense this last weekend. You know, they're shifting and they're moving around. If you watched the game very closely at all on Sunday, you saw that the Jets' front seven never got set until just before the snap of the football. And it's because they were trying to continue that confusion on Brady. Well, Brady, based on my understanding, there was a general protection pattern called. But it was kind of like, well, we're not going to worry about protecting what's coming. We're going to be proactive. And that was a better mindset for the Pats. And I think you'll see them do that against San Diego. You're going to have to worry about us first. We're not going to worry so much about you. It worked against the Jets. It can work against the Chargers. But only if you keep the Chargers' defense a little bit back on their heels. That's the way to do it. At least in my opinion, that's the way to do it. So can the Patriots O-line hold? Yes, but I think it will be difficult because I certainly expect the Chargers to do what they've done all year long, and that's try to blitz and put pressure on the quarterback. Alex in Somerville says, I personally couldn't be happier that Asante is this motivated by money. He is having a fantastic year, and I hope he keeps on pushing himself to earn more and more money by performing well. Better for him and better for the Patriots. I would also like for the Patriots to franchise and trade him. Another first-round pick could be earned. I do think that there would be a couple of teams willing to give up a low first or a high second-round draft pick for him. Patriots have shown that they can win with less than the best cornerbacks. Also, Gary, tell me you got that clip of John with that gimme respect line. What's that?
Who?
Alex in Somerville wants to know if you got that clip, I guess, of me with that gimme respect line. No, I don't think he was rolling on that one. Too bad.
But you can check it out on the podcast.
See, there you go. You can't have everything, Alex. Makia says, I'm kind of sick of everyone talking about the Patriots losing if Tom Brady gets rattled. I do recognize there have been instances this season where we have lost because of this reason. But one quarterback performs at their absolute best when they are rattled. Hell, everyone is saying that rattling Rivers is part of Pat's success. I'm just not sold on rattling Tom Brady as an easy win for San Diego. What do you have to say about that? I guess I'm not quite sure what you're asking here. Do you think are you saying that it's going to take more than just rattling Brady for the Chargers to win the game? Well, I would agree with that. But I think certainly if you do get to Tom Brady and you do provide the pressure and you do sack him two or three times and you do hit him another half dozen or so times and you do force him to hurry his throws another four or five times and you do force him to move out of the pocket a few times, all of that is called rattling. That all contributes to rattling the QB. And so what you're doing is you're causing other players, it has a trickle-down effect, Makia, you're causing other players to have to adjust their routes. You're causing other players to adjust their blocking assignments. You're causing offensive linemen, if somebody gets by them, to have to reach out and grab somebody to keep the quarterback from getting decapitated, which, of course, then would lead to a penalty and put your offense in a hole. So rattling Brady is just the start of it. But rattling Brady has to happen for the other stuff to really take effect. If they rattle Brady, does it mean it's an easy win? No. But it certainly is the start. If they don't rattle Brady at all, you're going to see the Patriots win the game. That's what I think. If they can't get to Brady, if the O-line performs as well as it did this last Sunday, you're going to see the Patriots win the game. But now we're comparing the Jets to the Chargers, and there's no comparison. Let's go to Gabe. And Gabe says, all right. Gabe's writing from Pennsylvania. First off, I want to congratulate you on getting the podcast. That's awesome. Ha ha. Thank you, Gabe. Now, let's go back to the fourth and fifth game of the season and see what Tomlinson did against the Ravens and then the Steelers. In the Baltimore game, Tomlinson had 98 yards and 26 carries. One catch for 7 yards. No touchdowns. In the Steelers game, Tomlinson had 36 yards and only 13 carries. 8 catches for 34 yards. No touchdowns. I point these stats out because I feel our front seven match up as well, if not better, against Tomlinson as the stats above. I would predict about 18 to 25 carries for about 70 yards. Tomlinson will most likely have a few more catches in this one, maybe around 8 to 10 of around 50 yards. But I believe our bend but not break defense will only net Nate Keating points in this game, and he will miss one or two field goals to boot and keep Tomlinson out of the end zone. The key will be to pressure Rivers and force him to make bad decisions to keep Tomlinson off the field. Well, that part I couldn't agree with more. I totally agree with that, Gabe. I do foresee a possible long touchdown pass and a run against our susceptible secondary, but if we can score a touchdown on our opening drive like this weekend, then it will set up the Pats' tempo for the game. This will be the tightest matchup for us yet if they survive intact, in other words, with no injuries. Gabe is already saying Pats 31, Chargers 30. He says, P.S., I was 1 point off in the Jets game, 38-16. The score was 37-16, so look out, Swami. Well, okay. Gabe, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that one since you were that close to the prediction of the Jets score. I said 23-16 last week, and it was 23-16 before, with about 6 minutes and change left to go before Brady
led
the
team. 0-0. I was right for a while.
Hey, come on. You have to admit, it was 23-16 before they went on that drive with about 6 minutes to go. So you got to give the Patriots credit. But that was right on. I know. Tough. Thanks, Gabe. Let's go to this one from Jim from Antarctica. Jim listens to the show. Thanks, Jim. Hey, we got our first email from Antarctica.
Got to get a pen on the board.
Okay. There you go. That makes all seven continents now. The Patriots playbook is reached, and Patriots.com radio is reached. Way to go, Jim. He says, I grew up in New England, and I'm a 40... yeah, really, the bottom of the map, Gary. Bottom, very, yeah, the white stuff down there, that's it. Thanks, Jim from Antarctica. I grew up in New England, and I'm a 40-plus year Pats fan living in Florida. And I always enjoy and appreciate the radio show, your insightful opinions and interviews with Pats players. I tend to agree with you on your prediction on Sunday's game. Chargers should win one. Belichick and the Pats haven't proven they can figure out a way to stop or even contain Tomlinson. They'll need to do that to force Rivers to have to win this game with his arm. Well, I'm right there with you, Jim. And after seeing how teams like Denver and the Jets rattle Brady, San Diego has the defense to do likewise. Hopefully the Pats can pull this game out, though. A play here or there, taking care of the ball, playing a solid game and so on, will, and the Pats can very conceivably win the game. I'll take Belichick over Marty in a big game and Brady over Rivers any day. I agree with you on Samuel. I'd love to see the Pats keep him, but the anticipated price tag just doesn't warrant the Pats breaking the bank to re-sign him. Just as, in my opinion, it didn't with Branch or McGinnis or re-signing Law before the 2006 season. Again, we're right there, Jim, on the same page. By the way, I doubt Graham will be back in 2007 either. Too high an asking price. But what do you think the Pats' chances are of re-signing Bant to Kane? He's still developing, but a nice fit and coming into his own. I hope we re-sign him. Well, we did touch on that, Jim, I think a few weeks back, and I think of the guys that are re-signable, that's the one that is most likely to come back. Number one, because he hasn't really been a full-time player. He wasn't even a full-time player this year. He moved into the starting role when Junior Seau got hurt. So I don't know that he's going to command that type of attention on the open free agent market as the others would, because he hasn't done it over the course of an entire season. And I would think that Tully would probably realize that himself. He's basically been a special teams guy. So unless someone throws an exorbitant amount of money to him, I do think that the Patriots re-sign him. He'll get a raise, a deserved one, in fact. But I think that there's a better chance of re-signing Bant to Kane than either of the other two guys, Samuel and Graham. I'm right there with you on that one. Jim says, as a kid, I watched the Pats lose to the Chargers on TV in the AFL Championship game in 63. Wow. Sounds like you're my vintage, Jim. This game in San Diego should be much closer and hopefully a Pats upset. For those that don't know the history, the only other time that the Patriots played San Diego in a postseason contest test came back in the old AFL Championship game of 1963, in which the Chargers just obliterated the Patriots 51-10, and the game was in San Diego, of course. Obviously, we're talking about something that happened 43 years ago, but when you consider that, you know, the Patriots had to win two or three games or whatever it was to go on the road before they went to San Diego to win the AFL championship, and, you know, they felt like, you know, they were distracted, they didn't have all their cylinders firing, there were a lot of different factors that go into the game, and I'll let you go into the archives. I won't so much try to, you know, recap that for you here, but there are some eerily similar scenarios playing themselves out. I don't think it'll be 51-10. And I'm not even totally convinced right now that the Chargers are that much a prohibitive favorite, although I do favor them slightly right now. But a lot of that's based on what I saw of the two teams respective of their regular seasons. That is the history between the two sides. So at any rate, we'll find out more, I think, as we move along. Justin is in Alaska. How about that? We're getting Antarctica and Alaska.
Justin's a regular.
I know that. He says, enjoy the show. I'll be podcasting this as well as PFW. Thank you, sir. Why I may be a little more confident in our chances this Sunday, if you look at the latter half of the Chargers' schedule, I don't think they've played a solid team since their first meeting with Denver on 11-19, November the 19th. He says, wins against Oakland, who had a decent defense. They only won by 7. Buffalo, again by only 7. Denver, by this time, this was a different Bronco team than the one that started the year. True. Kansas City, it was nice of the Bengals Broncos to let the Chiefs in. Seattle, injured secondary, only won by 3. Arizona, granted it wasn't the full team playing well, but still, I agree, you can only play who they tell you, but I think with the level that we are playing now, the way we've hit our heights now, this is an advantage over San Diego, who hasn't seen a team of this quality in a while. All right, Justin, I will give you that. I will give you that. You probably are right about that, that the caliber of team that the Patriots will bring to San Diego is something that the Chargers probably have not seen in a while. I will give you that. He says, also, Phillip Rivers, he's good, but still first playoff game. Lots of pressure. He has to perform. And that leads to mistakes. Yes, that's also true. And that's why I think it's more important that the Patriots find a way to cause confusion and put pressure on Phillip Rivers, because he's going to take them as far as they go in the playoffs. We're not talking, it's not LT. LT doesn't get the snap of the football. LT doesn't decide who to throw to and who to hand the ball off to. He just runs with the ball when he catches it or when he has it hand off to him. It's not his decision. The decision is ultimately the offensive coordinator in Cam Cameron and the head coach Marty Schottenheimer, but the execution of that decision belongs to Phillip Rivers. But Rivers has been able to have so much success thus far in his rookie year as a starter anyway in the league because he's got the rest of the talent built up around him. He's got great players at the skill positions that take the pressure off of him because of what they can do when they get the football. So the Patriots have to do whatever they can to disrupt that process. Give in different looks. Get into the offensive backfield. Pressure him. Blitz him. Hit him. Even if they take a couple of, you know, roughing the passer penalties, I think that it's important for the Patriots to send a message, a physical message. And the earlier, the better that they do it. That you guys are in for a war. You guys are in for a battle. The Super Bowl goes through here. Goes through New England. Well, you may be at home, but the only way you're going to get to where you want to go is you got to come through us. And I think the Patriots, if they could, would take the collective helmet off of the head of every Charger player and pound them in the face with their own helmets. That's what they need to do. They have to disrupt that process of execution by the Chargers. And so you're right. Lots of pressure on him. Lots of pressure on him. And the Patriots have already started that wheel in motion. If you've noticed some of the early, you know, media that's out there, the Patriots are like, you know, very respectful of what the Chargers have done. They're 14-2, best team in football. We're going to have our hands full. I mean, Vince Wilfork led off in the locker room a couple of days ago after the Jets win. You know, he's saying all the right things. And whereas on the other side of the coin, and I can assure you this, this is going to find its way, if it hasn't already, into the locker room down the hallway here. You got Sean Merriman on the other half at halftime of the Jets-Patriots game basically telling the CBS guys, oh, yeah, we expect the Jets to win. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. I think the Jets will win the game. And obviously the Patriots were up 17-10 at halftime when Merriman said that. Trust me, that's going to get into the minds of the guys down the hallway. So Merriman's already made the first gaffe of the week. My guess is that, you know, you won't have a lot more forthcoming out of the Chargers this week. Be interesting to see once we get the conference calls and we get a chance to hear from Marty Schottenheimer later this week, as we usually do, you know, the opposing coach and players. And this will be the interesting part. And do yourself a favor. Go see the San Diego Union-Tribune online if you don't get it. Start reading some of the stuff, and I think you'll probably find that they'll be more respectful of the Patriots as the week goes on, because if they're not, then it's their own grave they're digging. It's their own playoff grave that they'll be digging. The Patriots are the best in pro football, and maybe the best in all of professional sports, at turning the tide to us against them. That's how they've won 3 Super Bowls in the last 5 years. You know it, I know it. The entire NFL knows it. Patriots are good at putting the chip or the boulder on the shoulder and playing the woe is us, nobody respects us card. They're good at it. It works. It gets those guys motivated, and Merriman's already thrown the first strike in the battle. Eddie in New York City says, John, like always, it's a pleasure to listen to the show. You're gearing me up for hopefully another Super Bowl run. I just came from visiting the Chargers website and couldn't believe it when I saw that there are tickets still for sale for this Sunday's game. Can this be true? Is the Charger fan base really that pathetic? I know San Diego is great this time of year, but we're talking the playoffs.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Just thought you would like to know. I did not realize they had tickets for sale. Gary, what's up with that? He doesn't know. Wow. Well, if that is the case...
Well, how am I supposed to know?
I don't know. Thought maybe you had some inside knowledge. You are, you know, you do know everything here, don't you?
Everything but why there are still tickets available.
Nice cop out. Yeah, I would have to say that that's a little bit of a conundrum myself. As I had a friend of mine in San Antonio, Texas, one time say, Mysterium Tremendum. That would be a tremendous mystery to me. So if that's the case, that's a shocker. I would say that's a real shocker. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. John, I, like you, am not sure what to expect this weekend when the Patriots play the Chargers. I think that may be a good thing. It makes the game coming up more exciting and something really to look forward to. You do not know if the Patriots are really on a roll and on their way to another Super Bowl title, or if it will be like last year and this game will end up being another disappointing loss that will have Patriot fans all disappointed, angry, and complaining about the mistakes and the refs for weeks after. I do trust that Bill and the team will have a good game plan and will play their best, and whether that will be good enough to win this game, only time will tell. James, talk about playing it right down the middle of the road. I think you've done it with that comment, and I appreciate your taking the time to send me a note. Let me get one more in here, and then we'll get a timeout in here, and Brian Lowe will join us. Josh in Montreal says, hey, looking for some Bolt news. Decided to go through some Pat journalism, so here I am, a Bolt fan. Good. Thank you. Anyways, about the coaches. Belichick runs the ship in New England and is very good at this. The difference is San Diego has a good offense and defense because of Cam Cameron and Wade Phillips. They run those squads. Shoddy is just a motivator, if you ask me. And the system works. Pats have one guy who does all three jobs in New England, Bill Belichick. Well, you know, in a sense, that's probably oversimplifying, but there's probably some truth to that because Belichick does usually have final say in the matters that are, you know, concerning play calls on the field. I mean, that's why you don't hear a lot from Josh McDaniels during the season or Dean Pease, who are the respective coordinators now for the Patriots. It's because the buck does stop with Belichick. But that system has also worked for the Patriots over the last few years, and part of the reason why you've had guys like Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel move on to other jobs. Reason being, they want to be their own coaches. They want to be their own men calling plays, and they've deserved the shot based on their talents. Hard to argue that point. So if what you're saying here, Josh, is true, then Schottenheimer will continue to let Cameron and Phillips coach their teams and will just motivate, and he'll just sort of be the quote-unquote CEO of the Chargers rather than the grand poobah of the Chargers, which would be more like Bill Belichick. He's the grand poobah of the Patriots. There's a difference here. And if that's the case, then if the Chargers lose, then maybe Schottenheimer is getting too involved with the actual game plan, because that's been the criticism of him before. Josh, I appreciate the point of view there. All right, let's do the quick TO here. Let's continue. Let's up here with hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. The web address is webradio@patriots.com. That's how you send us email. webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number 508-543-7482. We're basically talking about your thoughts early in the week on the Chargers. I had opened up the program by saying I think that the Patriots aren't going to win the game. I think that they're going to lose. But that's my early indication, and I've given you some of the reasons surrounding that, and a lot of you are doing a good job of counterbalancing that or asking me questions based on that and giving me your thoughts based on a Tuesday perspective of the matchup. And we got a long way to go this week. So fire off those emails. Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News joins us coming up.
Breaks the tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs. Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen,
it smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Let's go, let's just go.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
Size hunger and want the awesome authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home. Tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack Sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots Brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack Sausages, Patriots Cheese Brats and Beer Brats, First Down Franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CNS Wholesalers, Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Tuesday. It's playoff week, AFC Divisional playoff coming up at San Diego. 4:30 will be the kickoff Eastern time this next Sunday. 1:30 Pacific as the Pats travel to the Chargers. Brian Lone from Patriots Video News joins us as he does on Tuesdays.
Thank you.
That's our podcast audience, by the way.
Oh, expanding like the audience. I love it.
Definitely.
Those are some people nice. Those are the people who listen to our Roster Report podcast on Fridays as well. Correct, Gary?
Right.
Same amount of people? Nice.
All right. We were just talking about respective records and such below as we were kind of getting into this and going through some of these emails. And I'm going to go through another email here that I got from my friend James in North Carolina, who says, John, you are wrong. The Patriots had a harder schedule than the Chargers and had a better strength of victory. Strength of victory. Patriots had a 4-6-9 schedule. Chargers were 4-2-4. Strength of schedule, Patriots a 4-9-6 percentage. Chargers 4-5-7. Well, that's true. However, what I said was is that the Chargers played more teams with winning records, not overall strength of schedule. And the fact is that that is the case. The Chargers played five games against teams with winning records. Patriots played four. Correct?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that's what we just
figured out.
Now, you know, how many games, the Chargers played Oakland twice.
Yeah.
They played Arizona.
Yeah.
They played Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They played Cleveland. So they played, I mean, both teams, I think, played an equal amount of the dregs of the NFL this
year.
Yes,
they did.
Chargers may have had a little bit more, because two games against Oakland, I mean, that's the team with the number one pick. That was the clear-cut worst team in the league. The Chargers played twice. You know, the Patriots didn't play Oakland once. You know, so it might be similar, I'm sure.
Well, the point is that it is similar. That's it. The Chargers played a slightly stronger schedule, I think, overall than the Patriots did. Slightly.
Now, regardless of the schedule, when you're two losses on the entire year for a combined 6 points, and they're both to playoff teams, you know, you're doing something right. I mean,
I would argue that the AFC West was the best division in pro football this year, with the AFC East turns out probably right behind.
Yeah, you know,
and because they played, you know, six divisional games, then I think you've got to give the Chargers the benefit of the doubt. Now, perhaps a more telling story is the fact that the Chargers were 2-2 in their 14-2 against playoff teams. Mm-hmm. Patriots in their 12-4 were also...
Also 2-2.
Okay.
Also 2-2. So, you know, that's not a lot of playoff game games against playoff teams.
No.
And it's a mediocre record. I mean, it's the definition of mediocre. So, it's similar. I mean, any way you look at this, I mean, it's pretty similar between these two teams. And you can, I don't think you can read too much into that in terms of, you know, how playoff-tested or battle-hardened they are this year. The Patriots obviously are, if you look more at past years and playoff history overall.
Yeah, the of course, the Chargers have going for them the 10-game winning streak, which is tremendous. They have not lost since October the 22nd when they lost 30-27 at Kansas City. Their only other loss this year was back on October 1st at Baltimore when they lost 16-13. So, you know, hey, if you put... you know, 7 or 8 well-placed points in certain spots, that you could certainly make a case that San Diego could be undefeated, losing those two games by a field goal. They also had some close wins. They beat the Rams by 4. They beat Cleveland by a touchdown. They beat the Bengals by 8. They beat the Broncos by 8. They beat Oakland by a touchdown. They beat the Bills by just 3. They beat the Seahawks by just 3. They beat the Cardinals by just a touchdown. Those are all one-possession games.
Yeah. And I bet if you look at a lot of teams, they have that, you know, that similar. But, you know, you can look at that in several different ways. You can look at it as how come they couldn't close out some of these wins against some terrible teams. You can also look at it in the sense of, well, it almost doesn't matter what the level of the opponent is to win these close games. That's what you need to – you need to have that track record of winning close games to make sure that if you're in those positions in the playoffs – you're going to know how to handle those situations. So you can look at that a few different ways. I mean, it's not like the Patriots had, you know, they had a handful of blowout wins, all pretty much against bad teams. So you know, they had their share of close games or narrow victories or narrow losses as well. So, you know, there's some similarities. Now, with the Chargers, the 10-game win streak, as you said, you know, it's almost like the Patriots back in 2003. They lost two games, and they were both in the first 4 weeks of the season, and then we know what kind of streak they went on down the stretch. So there's something to the whole, you know, momentum and all that. And then you wonder, well, I mean, they had their bye early in the season. Would they have been better off not even having a bye and just keep on going at the streak? I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. It comes down to, you know, performance on the field. I mean,
sure it does.
On Sunday.
Sure it does. Eddie in New York City writes, he says, do you think Belichick will incorporate any special techniques in practice to combat against LT? I can remember reading once that when the Patriots had to face the Rams in the Super Bowl, Belichick during the practice session started the wide receivers 5 yards ahead of the corners. I do remember that. It's a good point, Eddie. He did this to combat against the Rams' fast receivers. I don't know how you prepare for LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, I don't know about the preparation techniques. I'm sure he has some things up his sleeves, and maybe there are things that we'll find out weeks or years from now. But I'm sure that they have some sort of recognizable scheme or game plan that we'll see on the field. You know, if we and what I mean by that is when the Patriots played the Jets the other day, and on the first series of the game, the Patriots went no huddle shotgun. That, you know, that was the way that they decided they were going to combat the Jets' blitz packages that tortured them back in November. They will have something, and it's a good chance it'll be recognizable to the casual fan watching on Sunday of what they're going to try to do to stop LaDainian Tomlinson. I don't know what that is. I don't know. I'm not smart enough from a football standpoint to know what that's going to be or what they're doing, say, tomorrow at practice. To plan for Tomlinson, you know, is there a practice squad guy who, or a guy not in their regular starting lineup who's going to play the role of Tomlinson? Dan Klecko would be a great example if he were still on the team. Loved seeing him score a touchdown a couple weeks ago and line up
cool.
as a fullback the other day.
I know.
That was interesting. But
part of the reason why I'm rooting for the Colts this weekend
is so that you know get,
we can play that more next week.
There's no storyline bigger in a Patriots Colts matchup than the Dan Klecko storyline. And Dexter Reed, don't forget about him.
That's right.
Don't forget about him.
That's right.
But, you know, I'm sure that they'll have something that they already have in place to plan for playing against Tomlinson and to defend against him that we'll see in the game. The problem is Tomlinson is not their only weapon offensively. You can, much like Marshall Faulk in you know, back at the Rams. And, you know, you can do whatever you want, as Bill Belichick often, you know, often alludes to. You can take away one player or one element from a team's offense, and that may be well and good, but that's not necessarily going to stop the offense as a whole. So we'll see what they have. I mean, you know, that's a pretty solid offense. Their wide receivers don't stand out, much like the Patriots don't. But if you take, you know, running back, I remember way back early in the season talking about the Patriots wide receivers.
Right.
And I was of the belief that, well, the Patriots might have one of the weaker total groups of wide receivers. But if you take their total group of running backs and tight ends, they're one of the best in the league. San Diego is the best in the league. They've got LaDainian Tomlinson and Antonio Gates, arguably, maybe not even arguably, the best player at each of their respective positions. You don't get much better than that. So you can afford to have a wide receiver group that doesn't get as much done. I mean, Gates and Tomlinson, I think, are their two leading receivers. They were. They were their two leading receivers in terms of catches and yards. Not necessarily yards, but in terms of catches and touchdowns during the regular season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can stop Tomlinson all you want. You still have Gates to deal with. You can stop Gates. You know, you still have a couple of decent wide receivers, including Keenan McCardell, a guy that Belichick knows well and who has had some solid games against the Patriots.
Sure did. Yeah. I think we got a Charger fan here because Josh sent us an email. He said, Chargers were 9-6 last year against the hardest schedule in football. Go Bolts. Well, last year was last year. I'm not sure what that means has to do anything with this
year. At
this
time last year, the Patriots were saying, well, last year we were Super Bowl champions. We're fine. We're going to get by.
And, of course, it means
really
nothing.
You can't really do that.
He does say, though, that six of those games were come-from-behind victories. Again, last year.
It has no
bearing whatsoever on this year.
I don't have the quarter-by-quarter breakdown.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
Well, it's true.
Timely soundbite, by the way.
It's kind of true. At any rate, that's the scoop. It looks like we had it. Yeah, okay. Hey, by the way, if you are a Chargers fan and you're listening, come on in. The water's fine.
Yeah.
We're not going to bite your head
no,
off.
No, you're
talking football. No. Nobody.
Go f- yourself, San Diego.
Now, that's Gary. Gary, he might have an issue with you, but I don't have an issue with you. I'd love to hear what you think about the perception of New England. I mean, the fact is that the Patriots kind of come in just about anywhere they go, and they're, for whatever reason, put up on a pedestal by a lot of teams. Some have more success than others. The Patriots were obviously a very good team on the road this year because they did a good job of going with the us-against-them mentality. I think, as I said earlier in the program, Brian, that Patriots do this better than maybe any other team in professional sport. They cultivate that us-against-them mentality, and it works for them. And thanks to Sean Merriman, it's already been started this week.
Absolutely.
Because of what he did at halftime of the Jets game on Sunday.
I think it started a couple weeks ago, and it continued yesterday. And by that, I mean, what's the breakdown of how many Pro Bowlers will be on the field on Sunday?
That too.
What's the breakdown of how many All-Pros will be on
the
field?
And by the way,
do you think tomorrow morning when the team reconvenes,
right,
Bill Belichick is going to say, you know, there are going to be five Pro Bowlers on the field on Sunday. Do you know what the breakdown is team by team? Five Chargers, zero Patriots. What do you guys think about that?
And All-Pro Patriots.
Oh, that's what I mean, All-Pro.
Zero.
Yeah, zero.
And five Chargers.
Exactly. And Pro Bowlers, I know the Patriots have won. Chargers had eight or nine. I think they led the league in
yes,
both.
They did.
So that's what they're going to be going with this week. Not necessarily the media, not necessarily publicly, but you know that on Sunday at 4:15, when they're huddled up and they're rallying themselves for this game, they're going to say, "Hey, there's one bowl that matters. Let's get to that bowl." So all these guys on
they
the other side of the field,
catch an
they can
early
go,
flight
they can
to
go to their other
Hawaii.
Bowl. They
right.
can go to their other bowl a week later. You know, they can go to that bowl and have fun. We're going to go to a bowl a week before that. That's what they're going to be saying to themselves. And that's down the hall from where we are right now, they were thrilled to hear how many All-Pros there were yesterday. They were probably thrilled to hear how many Pro Bowlers there were a couple weeks ago. It's a motivation. That's what they need. That's what they use.
I told you, they utilize that better than anybody else in pro sport.
That's what they use, and it works. That's what they use,
and
it works.
And I think it's part of the reason why they're now, you know, perceived to be kind of coming together a little bit. That,
sure.
You know, the Jets game, while it was, I think, closer than the final score would indicate, the fact is the Patriots made big plays in the final half of the fourth quarter to put the Jets away. You know, they got the foot on the neck, and then they were able to step down.
Yeah.
That's the difference between a good team and a championship-contending team, is the ability to take that heel and drive it into the jugular of your opponent.
Get the lead and make sure that the opposing team isn't going to get a sniff of that lead again. And you're right. You're exactly right. They're up by seven with five and a half minutes left in the game. They score a touchdown. Turned out to be a relatively easy touchdown. The pass to Falk. That was the one, right? That was the fourth quarter one. And they go up by 14. You know, you're up by 14, 4.5 minutes left. You know, NFL teams can come back from that. But what do? You pick off Chad Pennington, take it to the house. It's a 21-point game, and that's it. You know, so you're absolutely right. They didn't have that secure lead until very, very late in the game. Once they did, you know, once they got a sniff of that, it's over.
I do want to go back over the Jets for just a couple of moments, Brian, to get your thoughts, even though we're kind of past that here, but only because we do make a tradition of a habit of trying to do that and nitpick a little bit.
Tuesday is kind of that day.
It is the nitpick.
Tuesday
is
that day.
And
by Tuesday afternoon, see you previous week.
Oh,
you're out.
No doubt. So that's why it'll be gone forever after we're done here in the next half an hour or so. But part of the thing here is that I think what we have to realize is that there are some byproducts of what happened on Sunday the Patriots can use in order to continue, you know, the process here and build up momentum and move along a little bit and perhaps even part of the game plan, in fact. We'll get to that in a second. Let me get to the phones here. John is calling from Arizona. John, you're in Patriots Playbook. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're great. We're great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I've been a big Patriots fan since 72, and during this run, I think, as we all know, I think the Patriots always have somebody that comes up big in big games. And I think that's going to be the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about Gates. We talk about Tomlinson. They're great. But who else? Oh, Merriman. But who else can step up on that team that we've actually heard of?
Well,
that's going to be able to prevent the other Patriots from making big plays.
Well, they have, you know, they have big-time players, and the ones you mentioned are right at the top there. They've got some other defensive players like Sean Phillips, another one of the their linebackers. Jamal Williams is a dominant nose tackle right up there with Vince Wilfork. They have some game-changing players. They have an immense amount of talent. I mean, even Lorenzo Neal, their fullback, is probably the best fullback in the game. Phillip Rivers has had his moments. He's only a rookie quarterback. He's a, you know, you can give him a clean slate when it comes to the playoffs.
He did get a Pro Bowl nod over somebody named Brady.
Yeah, and while we're while we're at that whole Pro Bowl All-Pro thing, I'm sure that'll come up too. But what you said earlier about Patriots players coming up in big games is that, you know, aside from Brady, who comes up big, it seems, in pretty much every game, there's
right.
someone different each time. I mean, Jabbar Gaffney the other day.
Like last weekend, Banta Kane.
I mean, he had one career postseason tackle coming into this game, and he had three tackles and two sacks in that game. That's a good example. Jabbar Gaffney in 4 years, in five NFL seasons, had one career 100-yard receiving game at all. He had never been in a playoff game. He was with the
Texans. I guess what I'm saying is San Diego, I think, has got a lot more studying to do because Belichick always seems to have somebody on that team that nobody's talking about make big plays in the playoffs.
Right, and you know, when you talk about the, you know, from a talent standpoint, 1-53, the Chargers get the nod. It's almost like going into this past weekend game, the Patriots and the Jets, the Patriots get the nod in talent, 1-53. The Chargers get it this week, especially the top loaded, you know, the top end, the Merrimans, the Tomlinsons, the Patriots don't have players like that. But the sum of the parts, the sum of the parts can be greater, and that's what the Patriots thrive on. They thrive on the depth that they have, the fact that they have three, even four reliable running backs. They have three reliable tight ends. They've got four or five different wide receivers who, on any certain day, if you add them, you know, if you take each one of them individually, none of their stats might blow you away. But on any given day, they might come to bat, and they have very few holes defensively. The Chargers have star power, but they have more holes.
I think our receivers have something to play for, too, and I think Harrison's going to come back if it's his last game playing.
You think Rishay Caldwell has something to play for?
I think Caldwell's got something to prove.
I think Rishay
Caldwell. I think Gaffney, they've all played for San Diego. And I really think Harrison, if he's going to retire and he has a chance to play this weekend, he's going to come and play.
It's a really interesting storyline as the next 4 or 5 days play out because I'll tell you what, players in that locker room, they really praise Rodney Harrison with the way he rehabs and comes back from injury. And Mike Vrabel said the other day, last week, he said, whatever time frame they're giving you for Harrison, just cut it in half and he'll be back. I'll tell you what, if he has any chance of playing this weekend, he's going to make sure to be there.
Yeah, he'll be there.
And it would really be disappointing, I think, for a lot of people. And when you think about this, too, Junior Seau, imagine if he didn't get hurt, he was still around. If he was still, not on injury reserve and available to play, imagine what that would be like.
It would have been a great story to have them both there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I just keep thinking 10-1, you know, in the playoffs.
Yeah.
All these figures that
11-1,
Belichick and Brady put together. And I can't even say just them, but just the whole team. We're so blue-collar and hardworking. No real big names, but somebody always comes up in the end.
That's the way they do it.
Yeah. And I just want to thank you guys for being on the air, man. I listen to you every chance I can.
Tremendous.
And
I appreciate that. Thanks. And now
thanks
we're podcast, so now you can listen to us anytime you want.
Yeah.
So.
That's correct. Thanks a whole lot. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number if you want to join us via phone. A couple of good points that he did have, obviously. Let me get back while we have at least the presence of mind here to talk about some of the good and the bad from the Jets win on Sunday. The fact remains is that the Patriots were able to play close enough to the vest. Even though the game was relatively close for most of the game, you never felt maybe one small exception, Brian, when the Jets took a brief 10-7 lead in the second quarter, or late in the first quarter as it was. You might have felt like, you know, well, this game could be in doubt. But for the overwhelming majority of the game, you always felt like the Patriots were going to win. It's just they hadn't yet applied the knockout blow.
Right.
And, of course, they never really did that until they went on that 60-yard drive in the fourth quarter. And then, of course, Samuel put the icing on the cake with the interception return. So I think that the Patriots' game plan was sort of conducive to the way they went about beating the Jets. Yes, the game was closer than the final score would indicate, but I think part of that was by design because I think they really wanted to make sure that the Jets didn't have the ability to stretch the field and beat them with a big play like they had done previously.
Right. I think a really crucial sequence came in the second quarter. I really think that this is where, even though the Patriots, they only had a 7-point lead at halftime, I think they made such a statement. And the way it happened early in the second quarter, when the Jets took that lead, they went up 10-7. They had been down 7-0, and in the span of about 3 or 4 minutes, they had a field goal and then that long touchdown. So they take the lead, and then on the Patriots' ensuing drive, the Patriots have first and goal at the 3, and the Jets hold the Patriots to a field goal. So the momentum, even though the Patriots scored those points there, and points are really, you need to get points,
yeah,
the Jets still had some momentum. They not only scored 10 quick points, but they held the Patriots from the 3-yard line to just a field goal. Now the Jets came back and had to punt, but the Patriots have the ball at with seven minutes left, and the game is tied. What do they do from the 7:05 mark? They keep possession of the ball through the end of the half. A 7-minute drive where they took a 17-10 lead. And what was really interesting to me was they had first and 10 at the Jets 24 with 2.5 minutes left, and they get the first down, and you're at the 2-minute warning. So they're first, they have first and 10 at the Jets 11 with 2 minutes left, and the Jets had 2 timeouts left. Now, I was watching this, and I was thinking, after the Patriots ran for 5 yards to make it 2nd and 5 from the Jets 6 with about 1:50 left, why weren't the Jets taking a timeout? They had 2 timeouts, and if the Patriots have the ball inside the 5, you've got to maybe I'm wrong. I'm just kind of thinking out loud that the Jets would take a timeout and try to, you know, figure, okay, the Patriots are probably going to get at least 3 points here. We have an opportunity maybe to get the ball back with 1:05, 1:15 left. And instead, the Patriots score with 14 seconds left, and the Jets don't have a chance at that point on. So I thought that was an interesting, and maybe not the turning point of the game, but for the Patriots to have nullified the momentum that the Jets had, take a 7-point lead at halftime, and not give the Jets were getting the ball at the beginning of the second half anyways, not give them an opportunity to score at the end of the first half and having a 7-minute drive, I thought that was critical. I thought that was a really important time frame of the game. It didn't necessarily change the entire course of the game because it was still close for another quarter and a half, but I thought that was important. I thought it was important to have that lead and not let the Jets get another chance.
You also touched on another plus, obviously, was Jabbar Gaffney's performance, having the 100-yard game, 8 catches for 104. So now I think you can say the Patriots finally do have a couple of wideouts they can depend on, relatively speaking, in Gaffney and Caldwell out there. But I think the thing that stood out to me more was the Patriots' ability in the run game. 158 yards. On average, better than 4 yards per carry against the Jets defense. Now, I'm not saying that they can do that against San Diego, but what I will say is that the Patriots' running game looks to be more effective, or at least as once as effective as it was perhaps early in the season, and so you're bringing it into the fold at the right time.
And I really think, as the season was going on, I really did feel as though they were doing it the right way with the running backs. Now, granted, Maroney had that, two games with his injury, but aside from that, over 32 games available to Dylan and Maroney combined. They played in 29 of them, and I think as we saw on Sunday, they were relatively fresh. I mean, Corey Dillon had a 5.3 yards per carry average. He fumbled, and it was a killer fumble, or could have been a lot worse than it was.
Right.
So that's a major, you know, X next to his name. But I think the way they use these running backs over the course of the season benefited them on Sunday and should benefit them again this Sunday. They're not asking for either one of them to carry the load or run the show. Now, in this case, Maroney had 18 carries and Dylan had 10. I have a feeling that maybe it would have been a little more balanced if Dylan didn't fumble. It seemed like most of his carries were before that point.
Right.
But I just think that having both of those guys at full or close to full strength, or certainly more closer to full strength in early January than they would be if either one of them were carrying the load. I think as the season was going on, I got the sense that it would be beneficial come January, and I think it is. They had 158 yards, as you said, 4.2 yards per carry, and they really had tremendous balance between the running and passing game.
The other thing that I think is somewhat, now that we pointed out a couple of high points, we always nitpick and find a couple of negatives here about the game, and there are two that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, still some poor tackling, some shoddy tackling mm-hmm. defensively, which mm-hmm. is ultimately why I began the broadcast here today by saying I think that the Chargers will win the game, because if the Patriots are able to somehow keep a guy like LT hemmed in and not let him beat him around the corner, who's to say he can't pop one up the middle? I think that will be a huge factor in the ball game. Patriots did allow this to happen on Sunday. Jericho Cotchery went for 77 yards, albeit ostensibly on a missed tackle by Artrell Hawkins that allowed him to go deep and score on a play that, gave his team a lead. So, here's the thing. The Patriots, I have beat this like a drum, and you know this as well as anybody on this program. This is the Patriots' Achilles heel that they have not seemed to really have improved upon at all at any point in time this season. They are still largely a poor tackling secondary. They are only adequate at best in the linebacking core in terms of wrapping guys up. And, of course, it's not the job of the down lineman to tackle. They're two gappers. They fill the holes, and they allow the backs to come through to where the gap is filled by the linebacker to make the stop. This is going to be a problem, I think, potentially, against a very explosive offensive team in San Diego.
Well, I agree with you. And when they played the Jets back in Week 2, when they played Jacksonville with Maurice Drew and this game, we talk about these plays, these fluky plays. Well, when they consistently happen and, teams go for these long touchdowns, maybe they're not really fluky. Maybe it's just poor tackling, as you said. And the Patriots can scheme all they want, 3-4, 4-3, 2-gap, whatever, to game plan against LaDainian Tomlinson, and that could be all well and good. But if you don't tackle the guy, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what scheme you're running.
And they've done consistently this year, they've consistently been mediocre at wrapping guys up and tackling them. And, when one level doesn't get to them, they have to rely on the next level of defenders. And when that level doesn't get to them, they have to rely on the next level. And, 5 yards become 10 yards. 10-yard gains become 18-yard gains. And that's where teams move up and down the field and win the field position battle. And, we remember, the game against the Jets back in November when they lost. And the Jets were, it seemed like, 90% on third down. And a lot of that was because, I think it was against the Jets. Maybe it was a different game that I'm thinking of. There was, a third and 25 or something. And whatever player it was just missed tackle, and gained like 27 yards.
Yeah, got the first
down. And, maybe it was Detroit. I think maybe you're right. I think it was Furry or Jones, Kevin Jones. But there have been a few instances of that. And LaDainian Tomlinson might not be able to be stopped, but you can limit the damage if you do tackle him. And where, you got to figure every time, when he touches the ball, he's probably going to end up averaging in the 4 to 5 yards per carry range. If you can limit that to 4.2 instead of 4.8 or something over the course of a game, that can make a big difference.
We got another one from our Supercharger fan, Josh, who says, all right, here's some stuff that happened this year that would be pertinent to what he was trying to tell us earlier about comeback wins. San Diego at Cincinnati earlier this year after three quarters.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
That's Gary saying that, not us. After three quarters, Cincinnati led 38-28. San Diego did come back to win that game 49-41. Okay. San Diego at Denver after three quarters. Denver 24, San Diego 21. The final was 35-27, San Diego. Oakland at San Diego. Well, I'm not even going to read that because Oakland's irrelative. Denver at San Diego the second time. After three quarters, San Diego led 28-20. Final was San Diego 48, Denver 20. So they led by 8 points after three quarters and then scored 20 more in the fourth. So really, I'll give you two come from behind wins in the second quarter. Oakland, they were 2-14. And for you to brag about beating Oakland, shame on you, Josh.
Yeah, the Patriots could probably find some games that they played this year that they could, brag about winning, and it wouldn't really mean too much. They beat some bad teams too. Yeah, listen, you could probably take any NFL team. You could probably take the bad teams and say, well, they were, you know, there were six or seven games where they only lost by six or fewer, and they came from behind, but then lost a lead, and they could have been 9-7 instead of 3-13. You could do that with just about any team. Some teams close them out, some teams don't. You give credit where credit is due. San Diego won these games. Fine, Oakland, whoever, they want them. Fine, that's good. I mean, you got you're better off winning them than losing them. But if you start analyzing the San Diego schedule and saying all these are come from behind, you could. You know, Oakland's schedule, maybe it could be flip-flopped.
You know,
it could be, you know.
The league is so incredibly even, really, from top to bottom. You're going to find that with any team who's
every
a serious contender.
Every team has close wins.
Has close wins.
Close
they have
losses,
come from behind wins.
They lost leads.
I mean, the fact is that, you know, hey, San Diego won more than the Patriots did in the regular season. That's great. We've already acknowledged that and congratulated them for it. They got a bye. The Patriots didn't. I think all things being equal, you'd rather only have to play two games as opposed to three before you get to the Super Bowl. We understand that part. But it's all also about momentum. And when you have a team with a rookie starter at quarterback in Phillip Rivers, yes, I know you have the MVP of the league, and he's a great one. There's no doubt about it. He's one of my favorite players. Hey, go Frogs. I'm a TCU guy myself.
Right,
anyway,
yeah.
From, you know, I grew up 5 minutes from that campus, mm-hmm. So certainly know about LaDainian Tomlinson. But I think, you know, when you look at the momentum, the Patriots have that on their side. We don't know yet what San Diego has going for them. And we don't know yet if Marty Schottenheimer will, you know, get out of the way of his talented coordinators and allow them to coach. We don't know what his quarterback is going to do. We just... It's an X factor. That's why we think that the Patriots certainly have an opportunity to win the game, but they have to come through on a lot of different things, probably more so than San Diego has to come through, conversely, in order to get a win.
Yeah, two entities that the Chargers have that you have to put in the minus category are coach and quarterback, at least in relation to what the Patriots have. You know, the Chargers at virtually every, at most positions, if we start seeing this week the breakdown of, you know, tight end, running back, linebackers, and all that, the Chargers are going to get the nod in a lot of areas.
Oh,
they're,
yeah.
They're not going to get the nod in coaching and in quarterback and in intangibles.
Right.
And it's a matter of what's most important. And if you look historically, is it more important to have a dominant running back or a dominant quarterback? Is it more important to have, you know, the flashy sack masters who lead the league in sacks and tackles and all that, or to have the guys who, you know, led the league in fewest points or in total rushing yards allowed and all that. And that's where we're going to see what it comes down to. And, what does playoff experience really mean? What does good, positive, winning playoff experience really mean as opposed to a team who doesn't have a lot of good, solid playoff winning experience? The Chargers were in the playoffs 2 years ago. They lost in the first round to the Jets. You know, Marty Schottenheimer has taken, what, four teams with byes to the playoffs, and they've lost in the first round three mm-hmm. or four of those times.
Yep.
You know, are those trends? Are those?
Well, look, here's what I brought up in the opening hour of the program, and I took the survey from Cold Hard Football Facts because I thought these guys did a really good job, and I want to give them the credit for it here. Fact is that Schottenheimer is a very good regular season coach. He has been. He ranks up there with some of the greats in the game. But some of the greats in the game, and I used two examples, Paul Brown and George Allen. You'd say they were pretty good coaches, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hall
okay.
of Fame
yeah,
coaches,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
They were both sub-500 in the playoffs during their careers, similar to what Marty Schottenheimer is. Fact is that all great coaches, all coaches that are put up there on the pedestal, the pantheon of coaches around the league, have all been ostensibly tied to great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Tom Landry had Roger Staubach. Vince Lombardi had Bart Starr. John Madden had Kenny Stabler. Okay? Chuck Knoll had Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Oh, who does Marty Schottenheimer have?
Well, he hasn't had much.
He hasn't had much yet.
No.
I'm saying that he could, if Phillip Rivers, you know, ends up moving that direction, he could. So I think that, you know, really, in order to be a great quarterback, I mean, to be a great coach, you need to have a great quarterback at some point in time in your career to help make you a great coach.
Having a great quarterback doesn't necessarily mean you're going to turn out to be a great
coach. No, but I think it gives you a fighting chance.
It helps you a lot.
It gives you a fighting chance.
And we just don't know about Phillip Rivers. Very good. And he's his second year, but very good rookie season. I mean, his first full year.
Sure, first full year was a starter, right.
Very good. I mean, he led a 14-2 team. Hey, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, as a rookie, 15-1, and they go to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
And well, you know, I think a lot of people still, the jury is still out on Ben Roethlisberger overall.
But last year he was surrounded by the right kind of talent for the team, and it was healthy, and he managed it. He didn't screw things up. And at times he actually did excel. at what he was able to do individually. This year, a bit more of a struggle. Why? Well, he had off-season difficulties that have been well chronicled. Now, we're not saying that's going to happen to Phillip Rivers. What we're saying is he's managing right now to this point in time because of the players that he has surrounding him, and the Chargers have built the game plans to where he can't screw it up. Now, what happens when the Patriots get out there and cause him to look at some things or do some things that he hasn't seen yet this year, which you know is going to happen? The key to this game is whether or not he can respond and the Chargers can respond to that, because you know that there's going to be some confusion on his part. That's why, to me, the key to the game is not whether or not the Patriots contain LaDainian Tomlinson. The key to the game is whether or not the Patriots can disrupt Phillip Rivers.
Right. And you know, LaDainian Tomlinson is such a huge part of the passing game, too, so that's part of it. You know, if they can harass Rivers and they can get after him, they've got a good offensive line too. But if they can make life difficult for Rivers, really confuse him, is really what it comes down to.
There's no doubt.
It's not just pressure or getting after him or sacking him. It's confusing him, and the Patriots might be salivating over what they can do to this guy who he's never appeared in a playoff game.
Salivating? No, I would say that they're probably confident in what they can do.
Right, And knowing
at least
that,
what they hope to do. In other words, they like the game plan, I'm sure.
And if
or will
guy,
like the game plan when they see it tomorrow.
Right. And if you get a guy rattled early on and he starts thinking too much and thinking, like, how am I going to get myself?
Then you're not playing the game.
No.
And then you got to play the game.
Yeah.
This one comes from another Chargers fan. By the way, glad you're emailing. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us. Here it comes.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
That's Gary Grudecki.
He just wants his name heard, so he's going to keep on playing it, so you say Gary Grudecki.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Who was that?
That was Ron Burgundy, I believe, was it not? Yes. Guys, this is way cool to listen to your perspective on the game. However, I take exception to the comment about gang members attending the games. I don't know. I don't think, Thomas, first of all...
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Yeah. That wasn't me. I think that was the PFW guys in the previous program talking about
figures.
That. And I didn't even hear what they were saying, so it's hard for me to comment on that. But Thomas says there are altercations, but they are due to the overuse of alcohol and not gang members. We do have problems with Raider fans because the people that attend the games can't name the quarterbacks between Stabler and Plunkett. We haven't had near the problems because they suck now the last 2 years, because we are definitely a bandwagon town and very few of us are natives. We get a lot of opposing teams fans, and that also causes some issues. Most of us are good-natured and enjoy jawing back and forth. I heard from other people that go to other places and say there are just as much problems as others, just don't lump us into the gang member club. By the way, this is the team I wasn't looking forward to playing. The saying this week is, to be the best, you have to beat the best. All right. Well, I'm not sure, again, Thomas, what they were mentioning on the PFW earlier. So, what was
Rick
that?
Ric
Flair. Ric Flair? That's right. He did say that, didn't he? Wasn't that one of his sayings? That's right. Gary dating himself in the old WWF days. So I don't want to comment directly on the whole gang member thing, because I didn't really hear in the context in which it was said. So we'll just attribute that to Paul and Tom in the earlier program.
Yeah.
Today.
Oh, it was just those two?
I think it was just those two today.
I would have figured Andy Hart would have to be involved in anything like that, but maybe I'm wrong.
He's usually the one that throws the stick in the mouth.
Yeah, right? I guess he was. Yeah.
All right, so while we've hit on a couple of negatives, we hit on certainly some of the positives out of the Jets game. The fact remains is that the Patriots are about a 5-point underdog. I actually think that they peg it pretty good, and they have pegged it pretty well. Vegas guys are smarter than a lot of us like to give them credit for. There has obviously been some news off of the field as well over the last 24 hours, with Scott Pioli apparently getting an offer, or not getting an offer, but having permission sought by the Giants to talk to him about their now vacant general manager position, with Ernie Accorsi stepping down. And, of course, the statement came from the vice president of player personnel for the Pats, saying that he was honored to be granted that opportunity, but he's going to continue in his current role with the Patriots. How do you read into that, and do you read between the lines as to, well, right now I'm with the Patriots, but maybe if the season ends on Sunday, I might talk?
Yeah, you know, I somewhat give him the benefit of the doubt, because Scott Pioli is developing a track record of loyalty, basically, and he's been rumored, or has even, you know, I mean, it was quite public a couple of years ago, Seattle Seahawks being interested, and each time there are any rumors or even official, like this one, official interest in Scott Pioli, he stays here. Now, as we know, it's hard to trust coaches and executives when it comes to looking for that next job and trust what they say. I mean, Nick Saban obviously is the most recent blatant example of that, and I'm not comparing the two. But I think that if you do read between the lines and with the way he says this, I am continuing in my current role with the Patriots. Well, you know, I could send out a statement every single day of my life at the end of the day and say, you know what, I've decided tomorrow I'm going to continue in my role with the Patriots in what I'm doing. And then the next day, I mean, you can keep saying that. I'm not saying that this is disingenuous, because I would lean towards saying it is truthful and this is the way it is. But, you know, maybe as a result of this, you know, he did get an extension that hasn't been publicized or something like that, is, you know, instead of allowing him to go, interview elsewhere. I don't really know. But, you know, I wouldn't sit here and say that as a result of this statement, he is here forever or here beyond his contract or whatever. I think, it seems a little surprising that, you know, the Giants job, it would seem to me, would be a job that he might be interested in.
Well, he is from New York.
He is from New York, and maybe, you know, I'm not saying that based on anything, any inside knowledge, but, maybe he genuinely does prefer to stay here. He knows he's got a good thing going as long as he's with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and things are going pretty smooth here. A consistently good team, and a team that has a good scouting department, good personnel department, good players, and he realizes, you know, this is the best place for me to be. 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, maybe
it'll
be different circumstances. But, you know, so I am continuing in my current role. Yeah, it's hard to say if that means 24 hours or 24 years. I don't know.
Let's also touch on, we actually touched on it just a couple of moments ago, but Rodney Harrison. Here's an ex-charger that, hurt himself with a sprained MCL in his right knee a couple of weeks ago, taking a wicked hit against Tennessee. Didn't work out for him, of course, to be dressed this last week. What are your guts on, what's your gut instinct on him perhaps taking the field this week against San Diego?
You know, I mean, I think, you know, my gut would probably be he's not playing. And it's so hard to tell. I mean, last week on Wednesday, Bill Belichick ruled him out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like it's rather rare that the team will do that. You know, last year, Rodney Harrison went on injured reserve immediately, but I think Matt Light, who had an injury in that same game against Pittsburgh, he was not immediately placed on injured reserve, but he was immediately ruled out of the next few games. I don't think Rodney Harrison is going to be ruled out tomorrow when the first injury report comes out, but I would be surprised if he plays. It's almost like, you know, the only reason you would sit here and say that he's probably going to play is because of the Chargers. Well, that's not the right thing to do. I mean, you can't just go out there and play if you're at 50% because it's your the team that you used to play for, and you've got a lot of emotion for that. My gut would be he doesn't play, and I think there's even question as to, you know, if the Patriots do continue to advance, will he be available? I don't expect him to play.
No, I don't either. Well, our friend Josh is not giving up here. I got to admire his pluckiness.
Sure.
The fact that, you know, he's a Charger fan, but he sends me the line score.
Go yourself, San Diego.
From October 2nd, 2005, here at Gillette Stadium, where then the 2-2 Chargers played the then 2-2 Patriots and beat them 41-17. And Josh, quite simply, I think Brian and I tried to mention this a little short while ago, but there are two words here that come to mind.
Go f***.
No, not that. But I believe that would be last year.
Yeah, last in year. Yep, two words.
Last year, okay? Has nothing to do with this year. So that's quite all right if you want to worry about last year. But last year's team has nothing to do with this year's San Diego team or even this year's Patriot team.
Right. It's one of those weird things. I mean, we sit here and we're talking about Marty Schottenheimer's playoff history and the Patriots' playoff history, and we're going back to past years and using that. It's a bit hypocritical to say that it has nothing to do with this year, but that was a long time. I mean, that was 16 months ago. The Patriots at that point.
It's not hypocritical. We can do whatever the hell we
can.
Want.
That's a good point, too. That overrides what you just said there, overrides all the rest.
Thank
of it.
You. Thank
you're,
you.
You're absolutely right. This is your show, John. You do what you want.
No, I understand your point.
But, you know, I think that there's a difference. There's a difference between, you know, the regular season mentality and the postseason mentality for the Patriots. There's a difference. Hey, that was right at the beginning of their real struggles last year when it comes to injuries and who was available to them. Every team has injuries I'm not going to make it seem, I'm not going to pretend that.
You would also have to say that that was really the exception to what the Patriots have gone through over the last 5 years, because they'd won three Super Bowls, as opposed to Marty making a career out of playoff failure. So that's really where these two things
are.
It's apples and oranges.
And that game against the Chargers, I mean, the Chargers were a very good team last year, too. They didn't make the playoffs, right? They didn't, but they were a good, especially at that point. I mean, they had a lot of these same guys that they have now, making a difference for them. That was the first week for the Patriots without Harrison, without Matt Light. Teddy Bruschi was not yet back. They were still relying on guys like Dwayne Starks, Chad Brown, Monty Beisel defensively. So when you think about that, it does. It makes you sick. And so they were going up against a very, very good offense where they were not just shorthanded, but they hadn't yet. I mean, they hadn't picked up Artrell Hawkins yet. They hadn't seen any kind of development. I mean, Eugene Wilson, we saw.
You just mentioned the three biggest busts that the Patriots have had player acquisition-wise.
Yeah, in the last 5 or 7 years, and they were all at once. So there were, the Patriots are in a lot better shape now than they were when they played the Chargers at that point. The Chargers might be too, but it's leveled off a little bit more, and a big difference is that quarterback. You got the intangibles that we talked about. You can't go back to that. You can go, the team can go back to that game and say, well, here's what LaDainian Tomlinson did, here's what Antonio Gates did, and here's what we did wrong scheme-wise and stuff like that. And you can go back and fix some of those things, but you can't take too much out of that and say that that is the that's the be-all and end-all in terms of scouting for this coming game.
All right. Well, since we're just about at the end of the program, what about PVN this week for Comcast viewers?
We are in full playoff mode. I mean, today's show, we've still got a few odds and ends from the game against the Jets, including Jabbar Gaffney's day, touching on the Scott Pioli news, a few other things. We have Ellis Hobbs had some interesting thoughts. Ellis Hobbs and the late Broncos cornerback Darren Williams, they had a lot of similarities, and they were friendly. They grew up very close to each other. They both played collegiately in the Big 12. They were both cornerbacks, wore the same number, similar size. They had a lot of similarities, and Ellis Hobbs had a true bond with him, and he showed that in a practice jersey that he wore before the game and under his jersey. He had some really interesting thoughts about Darren Williams, and so we're bringing those to our show today, too, and just some general transition for the Patriots from the Jets week to the Chargers week. And then Wednesday through Friday, we'll have full preview mode of the Chargers, and then off to San Diego we go.
Good. A couple of quick emails here that just snuck in under the wire. Daryl sends a note. He says, no way Harrison should play Sunday. If he does, San Diego will attack him like the Pats attacked Dyson. They have to tackle soundly on defense, number one. Well, that's what I've been preaching overall. Part of the problem with the Patriots secondary is they take their cue from Harrison, because Harrison is strong enough and powerful enough on defense to where when he hits somebody, they go down. But he does. You'll notice that Rodney, doesn't really wrap people up either.
No.
And that's part of the problem here. The other guys take their cue from him, and they're not as physical as Rodney Harrison.
Good
therefore,
point.
The Patriots secondary has become a poor tackling secondary, and that's part of the problem here. And finally, Dr. Z sends this note. Hey, John, tell Josh that last year the Pats were without the three most important defense players. Richard Seymour on the line, Teddy Bruschi at linebacker, and Rodney Harrison in the secondary.
That's right. That was the game that Richard Seymour
that
got hurt playing fullback during
that game.
That
is correct.
That game.
So he says, tell Josh to kiss my ass.
Josh,
you heard it. San Diego.
There you go. Sorry, Josh. That's just what the man wrote. I'm just going to pass that along. That's all I'm going to do. Tomorrow on the Wednesday program, we will have the conference calls. We'll have we don't know, actually, because they're going to be a little bit later in the day, correct? Just because of the time difference between here and the West Coast. But the conference call with Phil Simms and Dan Dierdorf, right? That will be for you on tomorrow's program. And I'm sure that we'll have some other items on the agenda. Possibly tomorrow, Sean Salisbury from ESPN will be here with us tomorrow talking NFL playoffs and talking specifically about the Pats and the Chargers. So you want to tune in for that. So that's upcoming on Wednesday's playbook. Thank you, B-Lo.
Hey, thank you, John.
Same Pats time, same Pats channel. Podcast even, manana.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson.